Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
Is that how the kids do it? Is that how they match it?
Ferris Bueller is still hip with the kids, right?
Yeah, everyone loves a very timely 80s flick. They're really knock in the new year.
Yeah.
40 years later.
40 years later.
Let's see. When was the movie actually made?
I want to say it was in 86.
1986. Maybe? Just kidding. If you thought it was only 40 years old, you'd be old. It is. Wait, 38? Right? No, 48 years old, right?
38.
Okay.
Hold on. Yeah. Did you Google to see when it came? Yeah, 1980. Wow, I nailed that.
You crushed it.
I was like, I know it's an early 80s movie because it doesn't have the vibe of an early 80s movie.
Yeah. So in 2 years, Cowell has made a very solid reference to a 40-year-old film.
Oh my goodness. It is very funny.
The new year.
The new year. Season 5 of the Mind Sculptors.
New CEDH. We got a whole new format. They banned 35 cards at the start of the year.
It's Ad Nauseam.
Ad Nauseam.
Doss's Oracle. Dockside.
Winota.
Tivit.
Counter spells. Period. They sort of said this counts as one card.
Yeah, they banned all blue or all islands.
Yep, the color blue. If you actually show up with a blue deck in any way, they will go, hey, and then point at you, kind of like that.
That's against the spirit of the format.
Right. But they did unban Flash, so I don't know.
I gotta say for a second, so I have this on record. To all of the people who somehow think that Flash would be okay in this current meta, you're on crack cocaine. Listen, I'm sorry. You can tell me that you think it's because we played bad Magic, however long ago it was.
Yeah.
No. But I test it with my little group. Okay. You also test Rog'Sai with your little group, and it's the best deck in format, and statistically that's incorrect. So,
I don't know. I don't see the argument for Flash being fine. Here's the deal. I can see the argument for Flash being a strategy that could coincide with the other strategies in the current CEDH metagame.
Sure.
Do I think it would be healthy for anyone involved? Not even slightly. I do not get why that's even a conversation. And also the format is how it is. So hypothetical banning and unbanning conversations are, in my opinion, rather trivial. I did put out a poll yesterday about Rhystic Study because I thought it was very funny as a concept that people were like, can we ban Rhystic Study? And I was like, well, just as a general concept, would anyone actually care? Right? Which is really funny because a lot of people were like, people are asking to ban Rhystic Study. And I was like, no, I just asked if anyone would care. Like, I did not say I need Rhystic Study banned, nor did I even express desire to have Rhystic Study banned. I really don't.
You're really Elon Musking it up right there.
Yeah, I was like, I was like, would anyone give a shit? And the internet was like, yes, we would give a shit. but we give a shit about giving a shit more than actually we would give a shit. And that caused the internet to break a little bit for sure.
You mean Twitter discourse was really stupid and unhealthy? No way.
Honestly, it could have been so much worse.
Could have been much worse.
It was totally fine.
Heuristic study. I have a little bit of insight into what the rules committee is doing, and heuristic study is not on the radar. So I would be more concerned about your dock sides.
That would be one hell of a shakeup, huh? Once again,
that would be shakeup.
I don't think these conversations are productive. Let's talk if it happens, you know, but
I agree. But I'm saying, as far as things that could happen, I feel like dockside is a very real possibility.
Realistic. And I wouldn't be surprised. I would be a little sad from a CEDH player's perspective. I'm not going to lie, because I think that's like the only thing keeping green viable nowadays, if I'm being honest.
Dockside being good?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, I fully disagree. I think if you take dockside out of the picture, the format slows way the fuck down.
That's interesting.
That
part is just like objectively true. Like the format does slow down, right? But I also think in a metagame where we would still have bowmasters, I don't know that like removing green's only way to like pump out stuff quickly. And obviously, yes, I'm aware that dockside is not a green card. I'm referring to the fact that creature tutors are abundant in green, in case anyone has a comment they would like to throw in the description of the video. Actually, no, I shouldn't clarify that so that people do comment on this video.
Yeah, please comment your unhinged takes. I think
dockside is a green card.
Yes, when you look in the top right corner, it is clearly a green card.
Yes,
I have to make this card now as a thing so that I can confuse the fuck out of people. But that's not what we're here to do today. Today we are here for the third annual CEDH Awards.
Yeah.
This year it's a little bit different. We don't have a Sean doing the intro, which is disappointing because Sean was maybe my favorite part of doing the ones in the past, but you know, perhaps now, we'll go back to it in the future.
Did we ask Sean?
We did not. Okay, so in my defense, part of why it's a little different is because the end of the year kind of just snuck up on me, and I was just like, oh yeah, we have to do this, huh?
That's fair.
So that's in a large part why it's a little bit different this year.
It's got a different vibe, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, this year we're just going to do it, the two of us. And we are going to go through the same categories. We're going to go through, and instead of picking a definitive winner, we will both have our pick for that card. And so starting us off is, one quick tangent. Mm-hmm. Mod Anonymous, if you are listening, please get the your petition going to get Ian some shirts that are not sleeveless, please. Our podcast deeply needs this. we need to remove scissors from your home.
I'm acquiring a sleeve. That's the whole point.
okay. So first category here is the best new white card of 2023. And you and I are in agreement here, which for the most part, you and I agree on most of these categories. But our unanimous pick for best new white card is, to probably the surprise of nobody, Dauntless Dismantler. Tell me about Dismantler and why it is just so fucking good.
Hey, you at home, you know how white decks want a blind obedience effect and they want it on a creature? Well, now they do. Also, can the creature have an efficient least added body as a 1/4? Well, boy howdy, yes it can. And also, does it have the upside of getting rid of artifacts that blind obedience can't do? Yeah, it can do that. I did not realize how good this card was until I was playing Drevi and played against Kinnan, and time walk to them by having Dismantler come in, make all their stuff come in tapped, and then I was like, oh, they're still insanely in the lead. And then I looked at the board and went, Yeah, x equals zero seems pretty good right about now. I'm going to pay one into this at your end step so that when Kinnan untaps, they only have one mana rock as opposed to three. And then my other two opponents also with zero mana rocks were like, well, that sucks. So, yeah. Wow, Dismantler is insane. The activated ability should not be forgotten about or underplayed. I think it's actually one of the strongest parts of the card.
Yep, 100%. Yeah.
So all of that on one 2-mana body that
I mean, I think comparing it to a card like Draenith Magistrate is a pretty like apt comparison. They're very similar statted bodies. Mm-hmm. While one is a restrictive text box, they are both doing quite similar things in terms of how they play out in a game. And the more we get bears like this, I think it just makes control and tempo strategy stronger. And you know, as a control and tempo fan myself, I love seeing new cards like this because I
also, it's a human, so it can flip off Winota.
Does it have a problem with Winota? Why is it flipping off Winota?
Stupid. Actually, one of the I used to make like little, like very silly alters when I would do proxies for my decks, and one of my first ones was I took Draenith. And all I did was blur out the hands a little bit and add like a little bit of paint. So it looked like he was doing the like 90s censor flipping you off. I'll see if I can find that image and send it to you before
that's the fucking end of the amazing.
Game. It was pretty good. I think it might be on my old computer, unfortunately, but
that is truly astounding. And I think we can recreate that. That feels recreatable. Yeah. Yeah. So Dauntless Dismantler, best new white card of 2023. Do you have any like honorable mentions for this year?
For white, honestly, I'm trying to remember when I was looking through this list. I don't think it was not white's year, if I'm being honest.
It was not a bad year for white, but it wasn't like last year, where last year white was just like popping from the seams with new cards.
Like, I mean, there's some playables, right? So we got like the new Vampire, we got Gandalf, we got Phyrexian Censor, we got Skyhunter Strike Force, we got Moonshaker Cavalry. Like, so there's all a bunch of like players in the game. You know, we got Boromir, got a card I'm going to talk about later. We got Elesh Norn. So like, once again, a lot of
role really players.
Weird niche role players. Yeah.
Which is actually weird because like if you look at what the other colors got, it actually probably got the most like all together than any other color, if I'm being honest. Yeah. Like when I was looking through it, I was like, man, some of these like red, lacking when we get there. To red was like one of the colors that was really lacking this year.
Yeah.
And
I think Black had a good year.
Black could have a good year.
Yeah. I will also say, like, I didn't mention Skrelv. Like, Skrelv is like a really like perfect example of like a really good role player in a lot of different decks, right? Like, it's a good Sisse card. It's really good in like low color stacks decks. Like, just another Mother of Runes that also has some upside. It's like kind of sick, you know?
Yeah. I think we've talked about that throughout the year when we were talking, like, doing our set reviews. Where this year, kind of overall, was a year where it was mostly good role players with like a couple standout cards
and a couple format warping pieces.
A couple format warping pieces, which, you know, I would much rather have a couple than like a zillion like we did in 2020.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Except for, you know, just those two cards that we'll talk about a good amount.
Yeah. But you can probably guess what they are. Next card on the list is best new blue card of 2023. And Ian, what did we pick?
In response, I'm going to cast Born Upon the Wind. Did it in response to your question to me, which means you do have to eventually finish the sentence later. No, Born Upon the Wind is absolutely cracked. That card's crazy. It's not perfect in every deck. I think that's some of the conversations people get confused about with this card.
Right.
They're like, I tried it in my very slow mid-range deck and the card was just okay. And it's like, because that's not where it's great. But like, yeah, I mean, it definitely was a big level up for decks like Rog'Sai. Anything Grixis.
I mean, even Tymnachrom, it was a huge addition.
Anything with the Grixis shell inside of it, just the ability to Born plus Dockside plus efficiently win the game, usually with Breach, is cracked. Like, it's dumb. And just doing stuff in instant speed is strong. Like, right? Like, Levine proved that with Registeel Flash Cannon deck. You know what I mean? And that was just a mono white deck where he's flashing in Heliod win cons, right? So now imagine there are decks like, once again, instant speed Breaching, right? Which is way more powerful than flashing in a Triskelion, right? So now there's like all of these different strategies that just like get this instant one up. Now, I think there's been a lot of hyperbole about this card this year, if I'm being frank.
I've seen people compare this to Flash, and Flash it is not.
It's definitely not that. But it is good and strong. Just kind of hot.
Yeah. This was a card that I remember when it got spoiled. I was like, well, this is going to be a staple.
Yep.
And sure enough, it was quite good.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I don't like about it, and I think this is more of a personal preference thing, is and I think we've talked about this too on the show when we were talking about my Thras Vial build, is I kind of tend to lean away from the Born lines, not because they're not good. They're actually incredibly good and very efficient, but it's just a play pattern I'm not comfortable doing myself often because like I just, it's not my strongest suit to like find that window very well. So it was a card that I just kind of like have drifted away from this year. But I think overall is probably like pretty easily the best blue card of this year.
Yeah.
Moving on down the line, best black card of this year. Do you want to flash this one in and on in response?
This is also probably my opinion for the best card of the year. This is one dude who is also two dudes, and one dude's bigger than the other dudes, but he would be nothing without the other dude. And also,
what are you saying?
It's one dude. The other dude's bigger than the other dude, and he'd be nothing without the other dude, right? The orc army is nothing without the bowmasters.
How many times will you say dude before it just loses all meaning? It's just
that's kind of a fun little mini game I'm playing this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winner of Best of Black card for both of us is Orcish Bowmasters, probably to the surprise of absolutely nobody.
Zero people. Yeah. That card's insane.
Card is cracked. I would love to see this card get banned. I very much dislike the play patterns that this card has introduced to the format. I think that it is probably one of the most, people love to blame like Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora for like the mid-range hell that's going on right now. And I think it's pretty easily pointed at like, Bowmasters.
I don't even, like it's Bowmasters' fault, right? I don't know. That shit's crazy to me. It really is. Like the card is just so much, and it's not like oppressive in the way that it's like the game gets locked down when one Bowmasters comes down, but it that's why it's a problem, is because it comes down and it just warps the game.
Yep.
But not in a way where it's like it warps it so we gotta, it's not like a Blood Moon, right? Blood Moon comes down, it warps the game so much, but everyone's agreed that it's gotta go, right? It's like, no, people think they can play with the Bowmasters, right? And that's the problem. That and the fact that people are still playing against it wrong, right? It's just like Krark Sakashima, right? Where people are just like, some people refuse to learn the play patterns to counteract this card.
Honestly, if you want to learn how to play against this card, download Arena and play Timeless. That is like the best way of figuring out how do you answer Bowmasters correctly? How do you go like play against it correctly? Because when you like narrow it down to the one versus one player, you see those windows much clearer. And the window is exactly the same in four player. It's just,
I don't know that I agree with that, because I think the card's different by a significant amount in multiplayer, right? Like the dynamics of the card. I was talking about this with some 60 card grinder friends of mine where they were like, oh, yeah, like we actually really like Bowmasters because X, Y, and Z. And I was like, yeah, well, imagine this scenario where you like this person creates advantage. This person gets punished for it, even though they're not even the person with the bump, right? Like, and that's the problem. It's the multiplayer dynamics of the card are what make it a problem, right? Not the singleton nature of it, or the 1v1 nature of it, right?
Right. Well, and that's kind of my point, though, is like if you want to learn how to remove it and how to deal with it in like the best window, I think the 1v1 format gives you a really good way of like seeing, okay, here is the like best window to kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
Because there will become a time where you just kind of lose. It just the Bowmaster is too big. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Mostly agree with you on that. But yeah, please ban Bowmasters. I hate this card. I hate that it has made Timnacrom the like undoubtedly best deck in the format. I love mid-range hell, but like this is like remember when Flash was like the plague and that mid-range hell, like we're bordering on that mid-range hell again.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that extreme, but it's
like for me, we're bordering it. We're on the Outlands, you know. Yeah,
it reminds me of Hullbreacher, right? A lot. Yeah. I mean, obviously for very obvious reasons too, but like in the sense that like when Hullbreacher was out, no one was clamoring per se for the ban, right?
Right.
But a lot of the people who I knew that were grinding CDH tournaments were like, this is just obnoxious always, and it's always relevant, and I'd rather it just not be here, period. Right? Like it was just always frustrating to exist. And that's where Bowmasters is, I think, more so, right? Like it is not, it's not Flash. It is not burning our house down. The CDH meta will be okay if this card exists. It will just be less healthy.
Yeah.
Like a period. There will be less people enjoying this game. There will be less people enjoying the format. There will be less people engaging in what, in my opinion, would be preferable play patterns.
Yeah.
You hear a lot of people bitching about currently like this methodology of like hiding behind a Rissic site is the best thing to be doing. And it's like, I think you are right. But I think the problem is not, as you mentioned, it's not the Rissic site that's the problem. It's the Bowmasters. That's the problem, right? Yeah. Like that is, it is hurting the diversity in the format and therefore segmenting strategies that are.
It's hard to hide behind creatures and play the mid-range creature game when you can't reliably hide behind them because somebody has a fucking machine gun sitting on the table ready to beat down every creature you play at any instant. Like that is,
it's like spawn camping in Call of Duty.
That is such an apt comparison. Yes, it really is. And that's what it feels like though. Yeah, so like Rhystic Study, if you go back before Bowmasters was around, wasn't dominating games like this. Like sure, it was still easily one of the best things that you could do, but it wasn't warping games because it wasn't the only way to gain advantage. Yeah. Versus you could play, you could play creature strategies. You could play these different board strategies that gave you a way to also accrue advantage. You just can't do that the same way anymore.
You know what deck I feel really bad for? I feel bad for Jory of Hyrolites. Specifically because that commander has gotten hurt by the ebb and flow of this format. I feel like more than any other commander, right?
That deck used to be a house. And it was just
I think Captain Sisse is the same way too, right? Yeah. Like I think they're both these like two color commanders that are like providing a unique, interesting strategy. They were both hurt real bad by Paradox Engine, and they both started to kind of show up again.
Yep. And then right Bowmasters. If you want to talk about a deck that gets shut down hard by Bowmasters, is Joyra, because that deck is literally like, if I don't have my commander out, then the deck just kind of ceases to function. Yeah, and literally. But I mean, like, not to go on a tangent, but that was a deck that, like, when Paradox Engine was around, like, you would be hellbent and you would top deck a Mana Vault, and you're like, ah, cool, I will just proceed to win the game now because I can draw myself into things to do.
Yep.
And it's just, it's very disappointing how, like, these decks that are commander reliant kind of continually get pushed to the wayside in terms of more generic strategies. But anyhow, moving on to what I think is the weakest category of the entire day, and that is best new red card of 2023. This was a struggle to find a reasonable card. It's a bad year for red. I think the two cards that we both found are the best ones, and I don't even know how much play they actually see. So that is a huge red flag So I chose All Will Be One, mostly out of the like the logic being that All Will Be One has a couple dedicated decks, right? And it is a one card combo with a handful of commanders. And that is a big get for those commanders. Granted, both of those commanders came out this year. But having that be a thing that exists, I thought was enough. And with that being said, there really weren't any like red cards that were just generically good that came out. There were a lot of not even role players. There were just a lot of red draft cards. What was your pick for the best red card of the year?
Yeah, so my pick for the best red card is Brass's Tunnel Grinder. I think this card is criminally underplayed at the moment. I've been playing it a lot in Breach decks, and it's very good in that space. Specifically, blue-red Breach decks, I will say I've been liking this card a lot more in, or well, blue-red X, right? Specifically with the ability to pair this card with Displacer Kit. And I think that's like we talked about this during the set review of this card, is this card is decent until it gets broken, right? So either A, you are using the artifact on board to sacrifice it, recur it, do goblin engineer, goblin welder type of shenanigans, right? There's another card from the set called the Everflowing Well as well, which does a lot of similar stuff. And so Tunnel Grinder is really, really solid when you can keep gaining advantage with, right? Now with like Displacer Kitten, you can not only can you start drawing a card for every spell you cast, but you're also sculpting as well, right? So you can choose and discard X amount of cards every time you cast a non-creature spell. So the combination of the two of them is insane, not to mention like what it does with Breach, where you're like dumping an ass load of cards into your graveyard, right? So you're at least netting card advantage, and not to mention card selection. So I think it's like kind of underplayed at the moment. I've been playing it a lot in new Narset, the 4-mana Narset, and it's been very, very solid for me there. But it's a card that you need to be playing as a role player. I think exactly like that, right? Like if it has the pieces around it that make it good, it is good.
Right.
It's like a lot of these lower color Breach decks, I think, is the best place to see them. So like a lot of these like Jeskai commanders that have come out in this past couple of years, I think will really start to pay off for a card like this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was just a tough year for red, like we were saying. Like red just didn't get anything that interesting. Yeah.
My like honorable mention is like Solifim, right? Because that at least was the first card to make red a technically viable burn commander, right? Like colors. And so I think that card is maybe a little underexplored. It top three'd that or top four'd that invasion tournament in the Commander Invasion tournament. I don't remember where it is exactly, but in Europe. And so like obviously that it's has legs enough to at least be something. So I think, you know, there's something to be interested in there, something to explore, and I'm interested to see if mono red burn can be like kind of a thing in the format.
Make Eidolon of Rhetoric a good, or not Eidolon of Rhetoric, the Great Rebel, like a card that you can justifiably put in a deck.
Yeah, I agree. That would be really cool. We'll see what happens with it for sure.
Yeah. Next category. This is the last of the single color categories, is best new green card of 2023. And we both have Invasion of Ikoria. This is Invasion of Ikoria's first win of the year. So, I mean, what is there to say about this card? It is exceptionally good. It has a little bit of downside in that it is a little bit narrow in what it can get, in that it can't get human creatures, which depending on your deck can be a big deck boner, or boner killer, I guess. But also has like a little bit of upside in that, like, if you get to a point where you can attack into the back of, or into it, you get a big ass creature, which, you know, again, like I'm saying, I don't think I've ever seen somebody do that in a game of CDH. But, you know, it is a thing that you can do. So it is technically upside, I suppose.
Oh, I've definitely done it.
Have you actually?
Yeah. Twice now, I think.
Okay.
Or maybe three times. But yeah, it's pretty sick when you get it. There was a game where I was kind of locked out on Sisse, and I was like, you know what I could use right about now? An 8-8.
A big fucking boy. Yeah, this is a really good card. I think the only other card in green that I felt really strongly about was Delighted Halfling. That was very good card for the year. Overall, again, as we kind of go through the like single colors, outside of white, like black had a good year, but it really only had like two exceptionally strong cards. Mm-hmm. Like outside of white, I feel like the other colors really kind of had pretty
rough years.
I
think like there were a couple format warping cards this year, and like that's kind of it. Which is not particularly what I love from a CEDH year, right? Like I would much rather what the original proposition for like Modern Horizons was, right? Which is like you lift up all the small strategies and then the big ones just kind of stay the same, right? Whereas this year, the deck that people were trying to finally get an argument for not being the best deck in the format got a brand new piece that completely made it the best deck in the format, or one of the top two decks in the format. So not my favorite progression of CEDH for sure.
Speaking of things that are not my favorite progression in CEDH, best new colorless card of the year. And this is the year of the Lord of the Rings. Because what do we have here, Ian? What is our best card? We've
got the one and only, the one.
The only.
Even though you'll see multiple in the game, the one ring. this is a card that is format defining at this point. I mean, genuinely, it is.
I mean, across formats, honestly, multiple formats, this card has just completely warped.
There are many games where this is better than Rhystic Study.
Mm-hmm.
I will throw that out there. Like that is, I have seen many games where this is that and more. It gave Sands Blue decks a card draw engine that they didn't have anything near previously. Yep. Right. Like a lot of these, like especially low color Turbonaz decks, like. Wow, is it crazy to be a Dehada with a one ring, right? Because that deck is like, oh yeah, I don't do anything if I lose my initial burst, and then it's like, I can tutor for one ring now. And it's like, well, oh, right,
cool.
it's an insane card. It also like had this incidental combination of disrupting damage based strategies, which don't happen to be the best strategies in the format. So it kind of sucks that those are the strategies that got hurt by it, right? Like we lost our Glint Horn combos, not lost explicitly, right? But like they got a big loss, right? The combat based decks of the format, the infinite damage based decks of the format are usually more fringe strategies, but now they're being hurt because this card that is universally played and occasionally will just like someone who's definitively going to win the game will just not be able to because their opponent randomly gets protection from their opponents till the end turn.
But yeah.
Cool. Great.
This feels like it is a Paradox Engine like card. Mm. The difference I see with it is that it feels more. Where Paradox Engine enabled the fringe strategies and lifted them up, like you said earlier, the One Ring enables the best strategies and kind of makes them better.
The better your cards are, the better the One Ring is.
Yep.
And that's it's not exactly always the best for strategies that are attacking the format in an atypical way, right? If you're trying to turn card draw into card velocity, then that's great. It's an amazing conversion for you. If that's not what you're doing, then kind of sucks.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the best new multicolor card for the year. We both have a different card here.
I think I'll pre-show that this is like a 50.0001% to 49.99999% type of thing, right? So it's a close one for me. Yeah.
And so for mine, I have Talion the Kindly Lord. If you have listened to the show this year at all, you would know that this card has been a big talk of the town as a commander, but also as a card in the 99 that has been a Rhystic Study-esque card that has done a lot of heavy lifting in blue-black decks to be an extra card advantage engine, and you know, with the proliferation of two mana or CMC like cards, you have Dockside, you have Bowmasters, you have all these different things. And Talion also has big fat booty, so it can withstand a lot of the more Bowmastery cards, a lot of the things that would normally deal with it. So I look at that and I see that as probably one of the best new cards, the multicolored card, as far as like multicolor strategies get. What did you have for this one, Ian?
I had my card that it's probably on the other end of the 49.999%. I think Talion might just be a smidge better, but we have Kutsil here, the brand new Grand Abolisher out of Ixalan. This card is quite strong. I have seen it win games already with multiple decks. In some aspects, green white is easier to play than double white for some of your spells, right? I literally actually had that come up multiple times with pods where like, oh, I need my white mana for this combo, you know, and then, oh, I can do green white instead, and that actually works out better. But this is a Grand Abolisher. You can green sun zenith that doesn't have downside like Dosan, right? Like it's very, very good, and also provides redundancy to any green white X decks, right? It is good, and then also not even to mention how insane it is in Sisse, right? Like it triggers naturally off of Sisse's combat damage because Sisse buffs herself based on legend. So with the Kutsil on the battlefield, you are at worst case scenario, having a protected turn while you go hit somebody and draw some cards. Best case scenario, you are adding two to your legendary pips and winning the game. That's what Sisse specifically, right? It's insane in that deck. But like in general, I think this card is great for the format. Not in the sense that like it is arguably healthy for the format, but in the sense of like it is a great piece. Like it is a card that you should be looking at playing. It is very powerful, very little downside, mostly upside.
My only reason for not picking Kutsil, if I'm being honest, is that I think that it's kind of reserved for the five color decks in the format. I don't really think it, like, I don't see enough of the green white X decks sub five colors. So I felt like Talion maybe had a bigger impact overall just because it is probably more accessible to the average deck.
That seems very fair.
But I agree with every point that you've made about Kutsil. The card is bonkerbillies. So best new creature card of 2023, Ian, what do we got?
Oh, what's that over there flying towards me? Is it an arrow? Ow, my 1/1 toughness. It's an Orcish Bowmasters. This dude is duding it up with this dude and getting the dude arrows flying. No, I mean, we talked about it extensively earlier. This card's insane. It is literally format warping, maybe more so than any card has been in a really long time. Maybe I think since Commander
Legends.
Yeah, that one. I think it's probably the most format warping card since that set. So yeah,
I would agree with that.
That sentence says enough, I think.
Yeah. Next category is best new artifact card. And man, I would, I can't imagine what it would be. That was pitchy. Come on. I know you were a theater kid. I knew you could do better than that. It's the One Ring. Who is surprised? It's the best colorless card. It's the best artifact card. Is stupid. Please, I hate this card. I actually don't hate this card. I actually really like this card, but
it's very powerful. It is. I think it's on that level of like it's broken, like a CEDH card should be, right? But like, it's close. I don't think it's nearly as bad as Bowmasters.
More of
format warping nature, but I think the two of them combined just like that's the funniest part about this entire conversation, right? Like in 1v1 formats, Bowmasters balances the One Ring, right? Because you then get to immediately punish the person drawing. Whereas in CEDH, a lot of times you'd be like, yeah, I'll draw three. And then the person's like, well, you know, you do have a mana dork and a cannon. And he's like, but I didn't draw the cards. And like, boo, 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 boo. And they're dead.
I got to say, I've been playing a lot of Timeless. And in a format where like Uro, Oko, all of that shit is legal, Bowmasters makes those cards feel so much less offensive. Like Like,
that's concerning.
who gives a shit about Oko? I have the Bowmasters that's going to make a body and also ping your Oko down. Like, it is very interesting. Like, it, and to, for what it's worth, I also think that it's a really cool format, and I really like Bow or Timeless because I think it gives a really cool insight into how other formats could maybe think about their ban philosophy a little bit differently. But that's a. It's funny, though, because it makes like Faithless Looting decks with what is it? The Arc-like Phoenix, if you remember that. A bunch of people were trying to play that deck and you just Bowmasters ping their Phoenixes down. And also like when they Faithless Looting, you just ping their boards down. And it's just like it's very satisfying. It's very good to be able to piss all over Phoenix as somebody who hates that deck. I really like that. But anyway, this isn't about Timeless. Next category, best new sorcery card. We both have Beseech the Mirror.
Yeah, you had some whack ass shit on there before.
Okay, so I had Lorien Revealed on here before because I could not find another sorcery at first. And I must have just looked this over or thought it was like a different something. Beseech the Mirror is 10 out of 10. No notes. Art is great.
Mm-hmm. Just a subtle upgrade to a lot of decks. Like, hey, black deck with any ability to have excess artifacts and or tokens. I know how you're all playing Dark and Cabal Ritual and Calling the Weak and all that stuff. Here's this thing that efficiently converts it.
Yep. Oop-a-doop. And puts it straight into play. Do you want a bring to light, but you get like a little bit more restrictive, but also a little bit less restrictive because it's easier to cast? Here you go.
You want to bring to light? You can cast a breach off of.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Next category: best new instant card. I think it's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, I think it's pretty sick. Born Upon the Wind. I flashed in response to myself that time. That's what you can do with this card.
In response to your draw, you can do that. Or, in response to your discard or your exile part with Necropotency. That's how that works, right? Yeah. So you were on your end step there. Yeah.
Yeah, now Born Upon the Wind is very, very good. It is really hard to argue that there's any better instance that came out this year. I mean, it wasn't like a crazy year for instance in general, right?
Yeah. But
this card is very good in the decks that can use it very well.
Yep.
All that's to be said left of it.
Best new enchantment card. I have All Will Be One for the past, examples of, hey, one card combo. Makes some fringe strategies pretty good. What do you have here, Ian?
I have another little fringe buffer. Although I don't know if you can call Najeela fringe. Flowering is good in very specific shells, right? I think it's probably a little underexplored, especially given how good Bowmasters is in the format. But in general, flowering is a really efficient way to put a lot of damage on the table. And not only that, like once again, when you are going to combat with like a Najeela, right? Like some people will be like, oh, Bowmasters makes Najeela combat way less viable. And it's like, well, when all the warriors are 2/2s and Najeela's a 5/3 with Ward 1, it's like, maybe it's not that hard to win the game with the card, I'd argue. It's definitely just, I'm really good with Najeela, really good with Sisse, right? It automatically puts Sisse up to 5 power, which is a very good number to have Sisse at, for sure. And gives her Ward 1, which, I mean, we're really, you can't underestimate how good a Ward 1 can be at times. So all that in mind, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in the format as far as these are concerned. And flowering is just good at giving a couple decks a little bit of a buff. I really like it in lower color decks as well. Actually, I haven't even thought about this as a Winota card, but like it might be.
Yeah. I mean, just Ward is good. Turns out
Ward does not suck. Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one.
Yeah, Ward is a good keyword.
Yeah.
Remember when they did Ward because they wanted to make Hexproof works, but they accidentally made it like better.
I don't know if it's better, but I will say it is more universal now, which in some ways makes it better in that way. Sure.
Flowering of the White Tree.
Flowering of the White Tree.
Next category is best new Planeswalker card of the year.
It's really hard for us to care about this category, but this year I think there were actually two that kind of didn't suck.
Yeah. What was the other one that didn't suck?
The other one? Yeah. Jace Perfected Mind. Because it's a second brain freeze a lot of the time, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I love, you know, as I have made that kind of my insignia, I love Jace the Perfected Mind. I also just kind of love Jace, but you know, that's a whole other thing. our winner for best new Planeswalker card of this year is Tyvar, Jubilant Brawler. Mm-hmm. This is a really good card, and it's also exceptionally good in a deck that is quite good this year, and that is to say Weatherlight Captain. It is quite good in that deck.
It's really a solid card, right? Like, all of these creature strategies are getting hurt by Bowmasters, but you know what helps is, like, not needing to pass an entire turn and untap with them, right?
Yeah.
So that's huge. The fact that it can, like, double up your Bloom Tenders by activating and untapping them, the fact that it can recur your Docksides and your Bloom Tenders and stuff like that, the fact that it is a very cheap, efficient Planeswalker. It's a Hermit Druid Haster. It's so many things wrapped up in one. The Hermit Druid Haster that also reanimates the Thassa's Oracle with an activated ability, right? Like, there's a lot of spice with this card, and I think maybe a little underexplored as far as, like, the South Mill strats are concerned. They're just, I think, a little tougher given the current metagame. All that being said, I think Tyvar is a really solid role player in the format, for sure.
I totally agree. Tyvar is just an exceptionally, like, well-positioned card for what it does and what it enables. I do kind of wish it wasn't black-green. I wish it could fit into more shells. But, you know, that's a very small quibble with the card. But, you know, overall, card is great. Next category, best new land card. This is weird because so it's the Shire is the best new land card there. Yeah. No, we have Mount Doom here. This is a card that is win con in a lot of different decks. I believe it's a win con in Sisse, if I'm correct.
It is a win con, to say.
Yeah. Overall, it's weird because last year in 2022, we got a lot of really cool and compelling lands with the channel lands and stuff like that. And this year, it really felt like the only option was really Mount Doom. There wasn't a whole lot of options as far as I go.
Yeah, there were some other, like, kind of interesting ones, but definitely not of the same quality.
Mount Doom really just is like, here's a win con for some decks. Yeah. Like, if you're a black red deck, you want a good win con. Here you go.
Yeah. I also think that second ability gets completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
And it's won me so many games. Like, it has won me so many games just by having that land and being able to be like, oh, yeah, no one's expecting this uncounterable board wipe out of nowhere. And then they're like, wait, what?
Wait, there's an uncounterable board wipe out of nowhere. Yeah. How do I deal with this?
Fun fact. Counterspells don't deal with that. You know, it's very solid. It can't counter
land drops.
That is true. I can't argue with that logic.
So Mount Doom. Great job, Peter Jackson. Thank you for the addition.
Specifically Peter Jackson.
Yep. Next category, we're into our last three, is best reprint of 2023. I think this is pretty easy to say. Here's Guardianship. Thank you, Wizards, for reprinting that card. If you want to do that like six more times, be dope.
I have Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swat as the same type of thing because they're a cycle, right? The, you know, Rollick less so, but still technically relevant as well, right? Just the free with Commander cycle. It was a staple in the format as soon as they were printed. It just made sense. Made sense to play them. Made sense to have them. Made sense to reprint them because supply was low. Ikoria was mid-peak COVID.
It was the first at the beginning of COVID.
It was the first set we got COVID blasted on, and we never had a real release for it, right? So, also my favorite gold flesh flavor.
Yeah.
But yeah, good cards to reprint. They were in had a scarcity. I mean, those commander decks were being bought for like $60 to $80, you know. So
I mean, just for the guardianship,
just for those cards. Like, right,
yeah. So, saying, yeah. I mean, yeah, great reprint. Thank you so much. On to our last two categories, and these are maybe the most prestigious of the categories.
Prestigious. Yes.
Yeah. As most improved commander for the year. Overall, there were a lot of decks that felt like did a lot of growing this year. Yeah. I think Tivit is a good example of a deck that grew a lot this year. Kinnan did a lot of growing this year. Timnacrom did a lot of growing this year. Rog'Sai did even more growing this year after kind of growing up last year a lot and then kind of taking that extra step this year. It really did a good job.
Yeah, I think there were definitely like respectable innovations in the competitive scene, and obviously having a more refined competitive. Oh, pardon me.
Bless you.
Having a more refined competitive scene definitely allowed for us to have these type of options available where people are innovating on real strategies, making them better, making them new, right? Like, I mean, think about how many strategies got innovated within the past month, right? So all of that being said, you know, what are we seeing from this? Which is like, there are, I think, two decks that depending on the parameters of how you categorize this, can really fill in this correctly. So why don't you start with yours first?
Yeah, so mine is,
I also had half of it being yours.
Yeah, so mine is Sisse Weatherlight Captain. I feel pretty strongly that this deck went from being like a fringe meme deck almost to being like a pretty solid top five deck in the format. It is very dominant. It has earned its place at the table. It is easily one of the most like consistent decks now. It just is having performance after performance that was really solid. And so it really felt like this deck kind of had a coming out party this year. So that's why I put Sisse as the most improved card or commander for 2023.
I completely agree with you. I think like the reason I say it's about how you categorize it is because our next one I think moved up to a new echelon, like created a new rank, whereas this deck definitely had the largest gap from where it started to where it ended, right? It definitely skyrocketed as far as performance.
Where did it come from? Innovation. And where did it go?
Yeah, where did it come from? The fringes of the format. Anyways, there's. I mean, we talked about it last week. Also, there's 480 something new legends printed this year alone. Right. I'm talking about how a new Ixalan commander, which is only a couple months old at this point, just completely gave this deck one of the best upgrades it's ever received.
Right.
And so it is constantly being brewed. I mean, there are new variants coming out because it's legendary soup, right? Like, you can do so many things with this deck. I was literally talking with patrons today about completely innovating the way you built it to completely shift over to a different focus. And so, like, there's so much to say about this deck. The other one I put up there was Timnacrom, right? Which is seem strange to some people who were sort of sniffing the Timnacrom copium in the past couple of years, right? Whereas like Timnacrom has always been one of the best decks in the format, right? But it has been one of the best decks in the format that you can just play around if you know how to do it. With Lord of the Rings coming out, with the change of Bowmasters, with all of the things that we talked about already so much through this episode, with the shift in where the meta is, Timnacrom became the best at doing the best things in the format, right? Originally, it was just a solid contender, right? Like, it was an A tier deck, right? It was a deck that did the best stuff at a good, efficient rate, maybe got outpaced by some things, maybe got under the floor with some things, but it was good at pivoting, it was good at planting, it was good at all that stuff. But now that the format's about pivoting, now that the format's about planting your engines, Timnacrom does it better than anyone else. And going up to being obviously one of the top two decks in the format, so solidly above certain others, is, you know, hard to argue with.
We looked at the stats insane last week, right? Like, I mean, it is very hard to argue that it is just in a different category.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there's also like a half shout out here to Devesh Krom, right? between like that was a deck that everyone was just like, oh, bad Timnacrom. And now between Sharky and myself and a couple other people, like it's definitely now being respected as one of the best decks in the format as well, yep. too. Right. So
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's look at this last category, the final category for the year.
Yes. Lettuce.
Best new lettuce.
Lettuce.
Best new category.
Lettuce, yeah. So what is the best lettuce of 2023?
Romaine is my pick, but yeah, I don't really like lettuce, so...
Yeah, that's true. Is the spinach a lettuce?
That's a good question. Is this our new Minotaur debate?
This is our new show. Is spinach a lettuce?
So our last category here is best new commander of 2023. And believe it or not, there were like we just talked about this, right? There were like 400 plus new commanders for the year. So like the options were boundless. Mm-hmm. But you know, there was really one that I think stood out to me. I do want to give a shout out to a couple of commanders that didn't, or specifically one commander that I thought was close, but not quite there. And that's Obnixilis, Captive Kingpin, I think is a deck that like had a good argument for being one of the best new commanders of the year. It is kind of cemented itself as a fixture in the format and kind of just consistently does well.
There's definitely a bunch worth shouting out. I think four mana Narset is another one up there where it's like that shows up, puts in some work. But I think we both agree on this new person.
Yep.
Very, very much so. So
yeah, it is Atraxa Grand Unifier. This is a commander that when it came out, we both were like, this might be a cool reanimation target.
Yeah.
Not in my wildest dreams would I have thought this was a commander. And
not would I have thought that there was a month this year where we said, oh yeah, I guess Atraxa is the best performing commander of the month.
By like a wide margin.
By like a pretty decent margin. I did not think that was something that would happen.
And to answer the people in the comments from our last episode, yes, we did in fact control the stats for people who cheat. That is a controlled factor in the stats.
Oh, do people say that?
Yes, that was a comment last week. It was like, did you guys control for that? And it's like, yes, obviously. I'm not stupid. but yeah, like Atraxa, just like even outside of the handful of like cheating at cases, like it just was successful. I mean, if you look at SCG Columbus, the event that I top four, two Atraxa decks were in that top four. Yep. Like it it's hard to argue with.
Very good year with that deck, for sure. Yeah. It's hard to argue with, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like a deck that, like, if you look on it, like, it's a deck we kind of had to come around to because we've spent a lot of time being like, I don't quite get it.
I played it the other day, too, just for some, like, fun pickup games. And I was like, man, I still hate this deck. Like, I just can't. It is just not my play style whatsoever. Yeah.
I like the card, though. The card is cool.
It's cool. Yeah, I love the card.
Really cool.
I want to play in the 99 real bad.
Yeah, same. Unfortunately, it's not very good in the 99. But so that is the 2023 CEDH Awards. Any final thoughts about the year, Ian?
Yeah. You know, the more I'm reflecting on the year, the more I think about like, oh, there were so many great things that happened at CEDH as far as like so many more tournaments, so many more legitimate tournament organizers coming out of the woodworks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some flubs in the year, don't get me wrong, but like overall, right, we had like the online spaces. Now there are literally, I mean, Powered by Chaos events are literally one every weekend this month.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the European tournament, there is Chaos, there is Mox Masters, there is the Lotus qualifiers, right? So like literally every weekend this month, there's an online tournament.
Yeah.
Right? That's sick. And we have Eminence doing the whole circuit, doing gold tier events, promoting people going to these medium small stores because you can earn points for this giant qualifier coming up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so this is really, really healthy for the format moving forward. When it comes to actual play in the format, it was not a great year for CEDH, specifically related to June. Lord of the Rings was not good for the format. I think pretty objectively, it was a bad set for the format, in as far as diversity is concerned, right? It really pushed two decks, arguably Kinnan and Blue Farm, up to like an S tier rank that I didn't think really existed beforehand. Which was a bit of a shame, kind of a tough lump for the format, right? I'm always, you know, in the camp that I am pro diversity, anti homogenization, and like that set felt like it pushed more for homogenization. Well, don't get me wrong, there's so many archetypes that came out of that set, right? So many cool cards, so many unique brews, so many interesting pieces, but it just happened to have three or four haymakers that just, and specifically the two that we've talked about ad nauseum today, that are just full, you know, crowbar to the kneecaps to other strategies. Yep. And that sucks real bad.
Yeah.
It does, you know. So
yeah, I think overall, I think this was a good year for CEDH.
Yeah.
Because like, again, like I think that the work that all these different tournament organizers put in, people like Eminence, folks that really put a ton of work in to get the format to where it's at.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is really encouraging because we saw the format kind of take that next step this year, where I feel like maybe in 2022, it was still like, it was competitive and it, you know, there wasn't as much legitimacy behind it. Whereas now I feel like it is a legit bona fide competitive format, where in the past, I don't know that I could have said that nearly as confidently.
Yeah.
But it's great to see the format evolve and grow. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm super excited for it in the future. Speaking of CEDH tournaments that are bona fide, this weekend, which will be in the past.
I was like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, we will, when you're hearing this, it will have already happened.
Yeah.
But in the past, because we are recording this in the past, but for us, it will be in the future.
Right. This is the new phase. I'm going to make a camera every time we go deep in the time zone. Yeah, right. Time.
We will be at SCG Con Cincinnati this weekend. And I'm pretty excited. Ian, do you want to tell the folks what you played this past weekend?
Well, I haven't played anything this past weekend because the way time works, actually. I have been wanting to bring Winota out for quite some time. I've been wanting to get her back in the CEDH echelons. She has one of the worst win rates of any deck right now.
It was the worst of 2023.
She has the worst win rate of any deck right now. There is a conversion rate. Yeah, so Winota went from like arguably an S tier deck, as a lot of people were calling her, to a deck that is now was really struggling just even to perform. So my hope is that with a few innovations I'm making, it can at least compete this weekend.
Yeah.
I've cut overall, since like the last time the deck was very popular, all of the Thalia effects basically were proving not to be good enough, and especially in a Bowmaster's world where they're all X1s, right? So that was a big kind of lump for the deck to take because those effects are rather important to the general strategy. So the Thalia's kind of went out, and I'm actually trying Stony Silence effects in this deck right now. So that's a new one. And obviously we got Charismatic Vampire, we got Dauntless Dismantler. So hopefully some of these new innovations combined with some new tech might make the deck feel a little bit more spicy. So
yeah, I'm going to be playing good old fashioned Christian Tivit.
Love that for you.
Tivit looks you straight in the eyes.
Yes. No.
There's no fucking around with Tivit. Tivit doesn't play any games. Tivit just sits up and is just like, this is what we're doing. We're playing magic the way God intended it.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Okay. This is a bit you are committing to, and I'm proud of you for it.
No, I'm going to be playing Tivit this weekend. I thought about playing like maybe some Ardent Crom, maybe something, maybe Thrasphile or something like that.
Yep.
I just didn't have time to really work on anything and get any good reps in. So I'm just going to go with all reliable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a deck that I'm extremely comfortable on and feel pretty confident taking it to an IRL meta and performing with. So
Yeah, no, the desire to play blue is like actually stressing me out so much going into this tournament. Yeah. Like I haven't played a sans blue deck in a really long time, and it's like giving me a lot of anxiety.
That's also kind of where I was like, well, I could play Arden Vakrom, then I lose black, and then I could play Strass Vile, but then I lose white, and like it was just like all of the options were just like, but I don't like losing black and white. Mm-hmm. I kind of like those colors.
Yeah.
So that is part of it. Also, it is a you have to own all your cards thing, and I just don't really have like I own like 97 of the cards for Tivit, so it's really easy to find the three duels to borrow from somebody versus like borrowing like maybe 10 or 15 reserved list cards for Thrasvile. Mm-hmm. So
borrow from somebody.
I don't know who would let me borrow those expensive cards. Nobody that I know. So we're doing that this weekend, and we'll also be at Magic Con Chicago.
Chi-town. I mean, still a while away. People are talking about like it's next week, but it's also one of those things where it'll creep up on you.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, like the CEDH awards crept up on me, and I had a whole ass year to get ready for them. But yeah, so we'll be at that. So you can keep an eye out for us. We're going to be doing a meet and greet on Saturday, which will be super, super fun.
Wizards is also doing like some single, or I guess Pastimes is doing some single limb like CEDH stuff.
Yeah.
Which I've signed up for one of those. So I think that's going to be pretty cool, hopefully.
Yeah. See how that goes.
Yeah,
it's a single elimination
of it. It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 64 player single elim, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I'm playing that. I don't know that I'm actually going to do events outside of maybe like quickfire drafts or something like that.
Yeah. I figured like, you know, they're using Eminent software and you know, doing an official event there. So I figured it'd be a good time to like just play with people and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, I'll do it again.
Yeah. But yeah, so we'll be at that. Ian, you are a CEDH coach.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. So if you notice, I talked about all of the CEDH tournaments that are coming up recently. And boy, would it feel good to be prepared for those things. If only there was someone available who had more tournament success with different decks than any other player.
His
in the past
name is
years.
Ian. His name is Ian. He's best CEDH.
I like
player.
How I'm going for the subtle misdirection, and you're like, yes, gospel time. Good, good, strong, powerful. But yeah, if anyone's interested in CEDH coaching, I have what I would consider a distinct enough resume to back up the fact that it's been pretty good, and it's become my full-time thing. People are really enjoying it. I've had a lot of really successful clients who have gone on to make top results in a number of different tournaments throughout the year. So if you're interested in that, you can check it out, comedianmtg@gmail.com. You can email me at Twitter at comedianmtg or Discord at comedian_mtg. Make sure those important differences. And if you're confused about any of those places, find me on one of those platforms. Send me a message. I can help you out. Or just go to one of my videos and you can check in the description. I also have a YouTube channel, talk about tournament CEDH. You'll probably see that video on Winota at some point.
Yeah. Praise his holy name. Hallelujah.
Okay.
Yeah, go check that out. While you're also doing that, make sure to go check out our Patreon as well. If you like this show and want to see more of it, we would greatly appreciate it. Yeah. Also, make sure to give a like and comment to as an offering to Algorithm Jesus, because we know he is a fickle God and we must appease
That's
him.
That's true. That is true.
So, Ian, how do you want to end this show?
You know, I was thinking that in response to the ending, I could pay one in a blue and cast Born Upon the Wind. And now it's a different ending. It's just like Flash. See you later.